You show up and you're looking at my mouth.
Yeah, that's quite the view to be subjected to at this hour.
Have you ever heard of the rapper Scoochie Boochie?
Nah, is that your alter ego?
Could be. He's a white rapper, so maybe. It's kind of like, almost like Little Dicky, like a little bit like humor rap. And he has a new song called Thick Dentist.
God, I love a big soft belly. She my type too. Diabetic. Huh. Hey. Thick dentist. Yeah. Yeah. I'm in love with a thick dentist.
And it's pretty funny. It's not really like kid friendly, but pretty good. So we get.
This is a family friendly show, man. Careful.
Hip-hop sometimes music. Adults got to listen to something.
Yeah, I'm yet to really censor my musical listenings with my children.
Same. Same.
They seem...
Glad to hear that.
They seem quite immune to it all. Not that I play anything that nasty, but like, yeah. There's plenty of naughty words. They haven't picked them up yet. Yeah. So, we'll see.
I don't know
see
if my how wife that transpires. Agrees to fully yet, but my plan, and I've mentioned her, is we have words we use at home and then words we don't use in other contexts. And I don't really subscribe to this. The fuck word isn't like inappropriate to use in all circumstances, obviously. I use it too often, but it's very descriptive.
Mm.
I don't know if I want my toddler using that word yet, but so, you know,
not quite. Not 20, quite 20
is a, just a little bit later. So maybe it isn't inappropriate.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. I always have this thought whenever I looked at the topic, what we'd written down, and I wrote one thing this morning, and I was like, I'm sure we'll think of something, but maybe we can get ideas from other people. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. It's been a pretty good week, I think. I don't know. It feels very blurry. I just can't believe it's Friday again. Things and stuff. I've just been, I don't know, just quote land. Switching between working on the new Kid of Parts builder at all hours.
Mm-hmm.
Squashing bugs while cooking dinner. Actually. I'm sure you are. Cooking dinner last night. Squashing some buggies and.
Yeah.
It's great. Loving it. I'm pretty happy with how it's going. Sorry? Laptop.
What device were you using to...
Laptop. I still don't have any workflow with Cursor for my phone, which is probably for the best. I need to get off my phone more anyway.
Oh, you haven't... I was thinking you had jumped on the Claude bandwagon too, but you haven't yet.
No, how far down the Claude bandwagon are you? I mean, you're wearing...
I'm hitting the limit.
Brand so, colors.
It's Airshop colors, baby.
Is that your... That's not your new Airshop sweater.
No, but I almost wore it. I haven't washed it yet, and it's one of those sweatshirts that, like, you really got to wash it first on the inside, you know?
Mm.
Where it's just, like, everything underneath it will just be that color.
I love that design. It's awesome.
That is pretty good. I have some pretty good new swag.
So how's it going, Trade Show Bob? Like, what are you thinking? I know you've been thinking
first
about
topic.
It.
I did this research on it. It's actually trending towards not doing it, I think. And we're definitely not, almost certainly not going to IMTS. Right now with our current lineup of products, I just don't think that we would make any kind of return on investment, and I can't afford to drop the minimum suggested for two people to go and stay. And all of the insane union fees you have to pay and shipping and all this stuff, it's like $15,000 minimum.
Yeah.
And just kind of took a step back and like tried to analyze, what do I expect? Which products would stand out or make sense in each of these shows? And I don't really have enough stuff for IMTS for like a metalworking crowd. Like I don't think tool tags and towers are going to like pop. Really, I'm not gonna probably make $15,000 back in a in a year on that, I don't think. Mm. So we'll wait on that for sure. And then I was digging deeper. I'm not convinced not to go for to AWF, not AWS, but it's also just pretty risky, I think, at this point. And with maybe a couple of our new products, it may change that if I can get them out here in the next couple of months.
I'm assuming that's a woodworking show. Well, like machine, wood, timber industry more. Yeah.
I should look up what it means. It is the African Wildlife Foundation. No.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
American Wood Fibers.
Dust Boots for Days. International AWF Weightlifting show. Federation.
Yeah, I can't find it. AW. I have the wrong
thing. Isn't it IWF?
IWF. That's what it is. International. I'm guessing woodworking, but it still says just IWF Atlanta.
Cool.
I love that people are just throwing their phones right now because they're like, it's the International Woodworking Fair LLC is what it is.
Mm, mm, mm. Cool.
It's bigger than AWFS, which is in Vegas, and they alternate years so that you can go to both.
And it's not just all chisels and leather aprons. It's like CNC and machine tools and stuff.
I would guess and assume I've not been to IWF. I bought the shop saber at AWF in Vegas.
Okay.
The other one.
Yep. Gotcha.
So I'm assuming it's similar, and yeah, I don't know.
Hmm.
I think it's just a show for CNC woodworking kind of things.
Yeah, sure. I had a look at your fancy spreadsheet, which is pretty dang fancy. I had a couple of questions.
Yes.
Is the intention to pick up retailers of your product or to sell direct to people?
Definitely both if I can. Think that part of what I was asking Claude to help me figure out in terms of a budget was like, what's my break even? And it made a very nice spreadsheet with formulas that work of, so I can update fields and add stuff and subtract stuff. It like looked into like the union rates at each of these places and what the requirements are and break evens. I really would like to find distributors for some of our products. And so that was something that I should maybe talk to some real people about, but it was suggesting that may not be the best place. Like these shows don't have, sometimes they have like buyer days, like wholesale buyer days or section time periods.
Mm. And
neither of them really have that. So you kind of, as our friend Custodian told us to send us a message that used to do shows like this in a different category years ago, that basically nobody writes orders at shows anyway, which I wasn't really expecting for like wholesale orders. But you're kind of starting relationships, but you know, and I'm not expecting to sell direct at shows either. It's like you're waiting for somebody like following up with them after, or they're going to go on your website and buy it or something. So I'm not going to chuck, you know, steel products all the way there and try to sell them to people one at a time in a booth.
Yeah. So I was curious about that because I didn't really know that you had a distributor pricing model. So like
it's
in your
expensive
spreadsheet, like I won't name the figure, but in your spreadsheet you've got your average gross margin as a variable, so you can play with that and look at like returns, ROI over whatever time period.
Yep.
If you pick up a distributor, presumably that gross margin halves or reduces fairly significantly, right?
Yeah, usually.
How does that play into it?
I don't have it. Like, I don't know. It only works for certain products, obviously. Like, it's not going to work for everything. And the ideal products right now are the tool tags, which sounds silly, but it's like we sell them in pretty high volume currently. Mm. And so that's part of why I was looking into injection molding to see if I could push that to another kind of level where it also offloads the production from us having to do it, and we can just order many thousands of them and sell them And it right now, I'm not sure. We also need the demand for it to be there. So it's, I keep finding this situation. I don't know if you ever face this, where it's like, I feel like a lot of business situations, this chicken and the egg of like, I need the sales to make the switch to injection molding, but I also need injection molding to switch to have higher sales.
Yeah, yeah.
Same with hiring, where it's like, hopefully the new person helps generate more income, but like, I need the new person to generate more income, you know, sometimes to like help make that growth happen. And I felt that a lot of times in hiring, especially a new role. Anyway.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's tricky. Don't know.
It was sobering. I think it's easy to jump away from like reality and go, I think we should go to a show and like have that feeling and think, oh, we have all these new products. And then when I really took a step back after looking at the numbers and like thinking, how would those sales come together and what would people, how would you stand out at a tool show, right? Like if we have tooling and tool holders, and I don't even know if dust boots make sense at a show. It's like, I'm trying to advertise a dust boot that fits on a few machines to people that probably have fairly large production shops that maybe have like BSEs and like that doesn't work on any of their machines. It's, you just have this conversation all the time of like, it doesn't work for you. Like,
yeah,
not going to be a great time. So it was sobering.
Yeah. I mean, great exercise to do rather than just jumping in.
Let's just spend $20,000.
Yeah. And I think like Custodian noted it in that comment to us, but like the one thing that really stood out in what he said was like the loss, like your lost shop time or your lost productivity back home is an easy one to kind of ignore as well, of like, I'm going off and doing this great thing that's really important for the business, but meanwhile, like, your parallel universe self that would have otherwise been back in the shop getting jobs out and getting shit done is that lost productivity, which is, can be pretty substantial. Or it just needs to be considered, I think.
Right. I think the allure of talking to somebody like my neighbor that had such success and it was like a big catalyst for sales growth was the drunkening part versus this was the sobering part. Like, God, yeah, you know, we're doing great with online ads, but I'm just pretty aware that a decent portion of our customer base isn't buying stuff from online ads, right? Like, they, how do you reach them? And part of my neighbor's conversation with what he sells is it's really impactful to sell his product when people can hold it and see it. And I don't know if that's necessarily true for ours, but it is, you know, it's pretty hard to ignore something when you're holding it versus scrolling by on an Instagram ad that you don't, or a Facebook Marketplace ad where you're just trying to look for something else. Like,
totally. Yeah.
I'm not against it. I was going to try and do just our local show. It's not like the best run. And currently it just talks about the last show. And I didn't realize it's every other year. I was thinking it was every year, and they don't have any information about the next one. Like, you can't, if you click like get information, it just takes you to a 404 page. It's like, what are we doing here? It's every, like, should always have something for somebody to click on to like get information.
Yeah. That's like the local billy cart competition here in town. They're just like, their website's all about the last one 2 years ago. It's like, come on, people. We're running it because I got a billy cart to build by October. That needs to be my primary focus right now. You call them something else. Soapbox? Soapbox racer?
Okay, yep. Looks the same, which is also a weird colloquial term that, you know, small cart. It looks like it's motorized, though.
No.
Okay.
No, just roll down a hill.
Can you build one out of kit of parts, please? It's like a thrilling ad.
Yeah, I kind of want to do it. Cardboard engineering version, actually, like use the oscillating knife to make an entirely cardboard billy cart. Those are the design rules. Can only use bike wheels and cardboard.
Bike wheels. And yeah, I like that.
And we'll call it thick dentist
wheels. dentist.
Yeah. So final takeaway on the show. Where's your gut feeling right now on IWF?
I'm definitely, well, so one thought that I think Claude suggested too was you should just go to the show, which is an interesting thought. And like analyze it this year, and it's way cheaper. And who was doing this? Pete, who was running before he took a job at Toolpath, he was doing
Chatter.
What was Chatter?
Chatter.
He was doing that at IMTS last year. He didn't have a booth. I'm sure he's fine talking about this, but he was like making incredible sales before took a job at Toolpath.
Trenchcoat, come have a look at my Raspberry Pi.
A lot of them, and he was just like walking around. He would like put them on different machines and be like, "Hey,
hell yeah!"
I think he had relationships with a couple machine tool builders that were letting him put his stuff on them, but it was like really effective. So I'm just gonna trench coat my dust boot out of my my dust boot in this back corner.
I think that's a really good play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be fun too.
Talk to people.
It's a lot easier to just go.
Yeah. I'll see you there. That'd be fun.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Do a show there. How much is Atlanta any closer? I don't think it is. Because you're coming the other way, right?
No idea.
It's East Coast, basically.
Whoop, 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 whoop. No, not coming to your hell in a hand basket anytime soon. Sorry. No offense.
It's fine.
I do have a machine to send your way, though, to the States. Oh, PS2 sitting there.
Let's
almost ready to put in a box. Sitting just over there, looking at me. It's going up to Washington State, Eric's shop is. And
Eric move states. Mm-hmm, I feel like I remember seeing him move. I thought he was in California.
Yeah, he was.
Okay. All right, that makes more sense now. When you said that a couple weeks ago, I was like, wait a second. I swear. Maybe we should advertise this. I don't know how long off, but use this platform. Kit of Parts is going to be in the States here soon. What should we link to from Eric? Do you have a website?
No URL yet. Still working on that URL. Please hold, operator.
Hold. Well, I'm just going to put my kit of parts placeholder. That'll work. You know, just like that show. Like, that'll get people to give them some information from that placeholder link.
I did have something I was pretty excited about this week, which I spotted on Matthew's stories, Matthew of Simple Wood Goods. Don't know if you saw.
Yes.
Have been following along his Edge Bander retrofit.
Yes.
Pretty awesome.
It is.
So I think he uses, from when we spoke to him, he uses pre-finished boards generally, and so he's machining he has to do is edge sand and edge seal for his box components, cabinet components, and he's been retrofitting an old edge sander to do edge sealing. I've noticed there's various little edge sealing experiments that have appeared in his stories over the last 6 months. Just in the last couple of days, there was an awesome update where he's done an automatic pneumatic edge sanding thing, which the edge sander dives in very aggressively and like edge sands the part, and the part just feeds through the edge sander mechanism, goes through the little polishing wheel and comes out with like a finished sanded edge. I was like,
amazing.
So I screen captured that video and shared it to the team comms, and we're all like watching along excitedly because we don't do heaps of pre-finished material anymore, but like whenever we do a big set of shelves which all has to be edge sealed, it's super arduous. We're always sort of trying to dream up better ways to do it, and this looks like the best way to do it. Pretty cool.
I mean, you spray finish now, that's why. I was going to say, you're finishing the edges, it's just not the same kind of content.
Yeah, it's just when you've got like pre-finished laminate ply, like ply with HPL both sides. It's just that classic problem of like sealing it, but then you're always going to get a little bit of sealing product onto the surface of the laminate, and then you got to clean that, buff that, make it all the surface all look nice and consistent and
right.
lovely again. And it's always just a bit of a stuff around. Ben's been experimenting with like stacking up all the parts and then just like spraying the edges right around and then pulling them off one by yep. one, and like get the like the pneumatic sander yep. with a microfiber on it, like polish all the surfaces and mm-hmm. clean it all up. But it's a lot of stuffing around.
Yeah, yeah.
Need a better
way.
Every
time I hear this now, it's stuck in my head. Did you see the McDonald's CEO talking about his product? I love this product.
Chris K here with, you've heard about it, here it is, the Big Arch. This is something that we have tested already. It's in Portugal, Germany, Canada. I love this product. It is so good. I'm going to do a tasting right now, but I'm going to eat this for my lunch, just so you know. So,
but it, yeah, it's the CEO test tasting one of their new burgers, and he was like the most robotic
I love this
dude about it. I really love this product. It's been doing well in Brazil. We've tested it there. It's like really like. It just like this like almost gives you the heebie-jeebies, like the way he's talking about food. Maybe because it's not food, you know. It's like, what is going on? It's pretty viral, and like everybody was making like knockoffs, and all the like fast food chains around in the country are like making their own versions of like, because he like takes a bite and it's like the tiniest little like nibble on the edge, like he doesn't want to eat it and he's being forced to. And so all the like Burger King and they're all doing like their own version of it and just like kind of showing
right.
entertainment. Forced media.
How's your hiring game, mister?
It's been good. It's always different every time I do it. Like it feels like literally the game changes and I'm like old man, like, what's changed now? I can't remember a time where I would reach out to somebody and they would write me back and then eventually just ghost me, you know, like just not respond, like with no like animosity, just like I'd set up an email to or emailed back and forth with this person last week to come in for an interview, basically like doing some prep questions off of their application, and then tipped off the whole time like, I want you to come in and have an interview. And we're trying to figure out a time, and then they just like didn't respond anymore. And even after I followed up, I was just like, is this common now that you just ghost like employers that you're trying to get a job from? I just, what?
That's an easy one to cross off the list, I guess.
Yeah. Reached out to another one, hasn't responded at all. And then, you know, you can always go like, well, it's just email. Like it just got stuck somewhere, but it seems, you know, works most of the time. So anyway, I have a couple people I really like and kind of trying to finalize it hopefully this week. We'll see.
Okay, cool. So you haven't had any in-persons yet?
Yep, no, I did.
Oh, you have? Yeah, yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
In progress. Well. Yeah, cool. Nice.
Yep.
And you've been doing a vibe check with Ricky as well, with in-persons? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll kind of like throw him some of the applicants that I like usually and let him read some on them. And then when they came in, we discussed in advance, like, because he said he remembered when he interviewed one of our past employees was in on the, because it was like dead COVID time, like 2021. And so we did Zoom interviews for the first round when I was hiring at that point. And he's like, I really remember having that other person in the room, and that like made it seem like gave me such a different like feeling of what the place was like, right? Like that it wasn't just me, I guess. And I was like, oh, that's good. I don't remember that interview at all, but sorry. I wanted him to be involved, so he was, and it went, he really liked that person, and yeah
cool.
And well, it's always interesting to think about, like, are they watching or listening to these, you know, kind of like a week past the conversation's happening.
We'll keep it generic.
The AI watching for them. I sold. I keep hearing myself, and it just drives me crazy.
Oh, really?
Maybe it's happening locally. Am I looping it in myself? I bought a new Mac at the end of last year. As I think I mentioned, I was kind of hitting a wall doing some programming. I felt slow. And I always feel like when that happens, it's time to upgrade because it's just not worth it. And it was really fortuitous timing because the computer world and components for them went insane right after that. And SSDs and memory, like just... Like I went to go buy a new micro SD card yesterday and they've like doubled in price. And the Mac M1 Mac Studio that I got in 2022, I just sold today. It was up for about a half a day on Facebook Marketplace. And I got within $100 of what I listed it for. I got $1,100 for it. I spent $1,989 on it. And from when I first looked in December to when I finally got around to formatting it and listing it online, it had gone from $700 to $1,100 in value in that time period. And that's rare, but often I do get like a really good return on used Macs. And it's just always to me such another reason why I use them, or they just have such resale value for so long.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a bit of, I suppose, a flow on hype at the moment in terms of people trying to find Mac minis for open floor, snippety. And I do find myself fairly regularly opening Facebook Marketplace to have a little quick little snoop around, see what little silver Mac boxes are in my area.
Right.
But yeah, I did I'm curious because I know you work like this. You have a Mac desktop, like you run the studios or things like that.
Yep.
And you presumably have a laptop as well, still?
Yep. Probably don't need it anymore. Both, I do.
And how does that work in terms of like taking projects home? Like most of your work's happening on your desktop. What's your workflow look like in terms of you're at home, maybe on a kid day, you want to get some work done? Are you remoting into your main thing? Most things sync, yeah.
Did you know that Fusion works on the cloud? No, everything's Google Drive, Dropbox.
Okay.
Some stuff's iCloud. But, I mean, most of my work is like, I don't even, you know, we don't do enough client work anymore where I even worry about their files enough, or it's like, I think the way that the Macs have gone, that I could absolutely just be using the laptop I have, the MacBook, but there's something about having like a beast of a desktop that still allures, you know, when we have the weird projects and it's just like literally no lag ever. So it just sits here. And we need another computer to do kind of like quick change programming out by the machine at the UMC. And I'm going to get a cheaper Mac Mini just to remote back to this computer, basically in-house. I know that's pretty common, but I'm not going to try to like have a beast two places. I have been using my laptop a lot, but it just like doesn't fit out there like on the way that stuff is. So eventually when I find a used one that's not like basically like $300 or $400, you know, some used thing that has enough RAM and an SSD inside that I can get on the network and just remote to this computer and program with. But
yeah,
it's a little silly, I admit.
I'm just curious. Yeah. I find myself sort of fantasizing about desktops now and then for some reason. I don't know why. Yeah. There's something appealing about having that sort of always on beast, as you say, as a workstation that you can sort of tap into. But don't know.
Yep.
Don't know.
Yeah.
It's probably partly too because I dropped my M2 laptop recently for the first time and took a hard fall on concrete. And I'm like, my baby.
Right. Got an email back from a candidate.
Ooh.
Don't open your email. Don't vibe code on the show.
No. Naughty, naughty. Well, I can't tell you how many times I listened to Vibe Coding Daddy over the last week, but it was a lot.
So here's the good news is I am currently in the process of putting them all on YouTube.
Oh, hell
all
yeah.
Their past songs, and there's going to be a playlist at the end here. Go check out the show notes. The only holdup I've had is like I have not had an easy process to go from I have an MP3 file to how do I get it somewhere else that it sits? And so I'm just going to put a static image on top of that and turn it into a video and put it on our YouTube. So
yep.
I've had enough people, like shockingly enough people that message us after the show's dropped. Like I've been listening to that song all week and I'm like, me too. I'm glad I'm not the only crazy person.
Excellent.
That was all you. Tell me about your prompt.
Daddy Only Codes on Thursday night. Look, it was using my main Sim Theory agent, who I do most things with. So they've got a very broad memory bank of my activities. It's not one of my isolated agents that I only use for certain things. And so fairly sort of rich contextual memory. I'm just opening her memories to see what sort of stuff are in there. It's like,
you can do that.
Bit of everything, like very broad sort of context of all the little projects I'm working on business stuff, home stuff. Which I think helped in the context of prompting for that song. And it wasn't a single shot. It was like, I think that was my fourth shot at it because it wasn't hitting what I wanted it to hit. And I had a specific magnetic field song in mind that I was trying to sort of get the tone of a bit in terms of Stephen Merritt's like songwriting, but like it couldn't do that. Like it failed repetitively to try and sort of get anywhere near that tone. And the version that ended up on the show still wasn't really what I wanted it to be, but yeah. So I was using a few shots and like refining, and Suno in Sim Theory, I don't know how you found it, but like you can change like the shape and the feel of the song quite significantly, but it seems to get quite stuck on lyrics. And like it will just keep, unless you ask it specifically, it'll keep just pushing out the same lyrics, but then you can form it around that.
I found that I used to just kind of like one shot them, and I found that I will... We're giving up all of our artist secrets here. I found that I will have it generate me lyrics before it creates the song, and then I correct.
Interesting.
Sometimes correct even just like the vibe of what it's, I say, give me three song ideas from the show, and it will give me, and it's just remarkably good usually at like finding something. And most of the ones that I think people like the most, it's very little. God, a windstorm.
Sorry, microphone. Sorry, ears. It's funny making...
It just doesn't, you know.
Making music with AI is the thing that makes me most squeamish about this technology. I really enjoy doing it. I do not feel comfortable using those tools, and I don't know why. I think because I empathize with musicians maybe more than any other creative field. Even though I'm not a musician myself, I worry about this technology's effect on them kind of more than other industries. But damn, it's fun. Evil and fun.
Yeah. I don't know what I have. I don't have any bad feeling. No, I know what you mean. I think image editing, I listen to a podcast. I think I'm pretty jaded at this point, unfortunately, but I do listen to a podcast, and one of the people that supports that show wrote in to say that they are a professional image editor. And I did a little bit of like a spit take, like that's still a thing, you know, like, because like I have a skill set that I spent 15 years, 20. I started image editing in middle school with Jask Paint Shop Pro 7 that I torrented. Just, you know, well beyond like things that were probably used at the time. And just, you know, all through architecture school, got better and better, learning how to stamp tool. And like, there was no like content aware fill stuff or smart fills. And I did have a weird feeling at some point when you could remove stuff with some lasso and fill erase kind of thing. And now it's just like, you basically just like shout at a computer and it will put a, you know, completely change an image. And I mean, we're just saying the same thing we've been talking about forever, but it's just, it's changing so fast that like people's jobs are just being erased like weekly, you know? And I don't know what that is to say, like, where do you go from there? I don't know what, in some of those cases, what you do, but this continues to happen through the world. Like, we always joke about the buggy whip salespeople here, like, and what, you know, it happens. The world changes, but they can be empathetic and find new skill, new places their skills can go, hopefully.
Yeah, I met a graphic designer the other night at table tennis, and like he saw the surprise in my face when he said, "Hey, I'm a graphic designer," and I was like, "Oh, that's still a thing?" And he laughed and was like, "Yeah, for now," and said, "He's been doing it a long time, and he's got a dedicated client base of people who, you know, will always come to him because they trust him, and you know, they're his clients, and they're not going to go off and try and do the things that he does for them using AI tools because they want him to do it." So I guess, yeah, whether he uses AI or not, don't know. I doubt it. Haven't chatted to him about it specifically, but I guess there's always that, you know, there's the human connection part of it, which will keep people in jobs longer.
If, you know, in both of those cases, image and graphics, I think a lot of that business support of other business, it's project management too. It's like,
totally.
There's a lot there that it's just like, I need brochures made. And it's like interfacing with those other companies so that it gets done, making sure it's the right look. Like, you're often like basically hiring a contract employee for a bit. And sure, AI is going to do that at some point, but the trust isn't going to be there for a long time.
Yeah. Backtracking one step, there's an interesting video I found on YouTube the other night from Ben Jordan about AI music and stuff, but he's deliberately making prompt injections. So he's creating audio that confuses things like Suno or those coagulators that are taking artists' music, and basically creating audio malware to feed into their system to mess up their algorithms. It's quite cool. It's an interesting channel, actually. There's another really good video which I watched during the week, which I recommend, which was all about Aphex Twin and all the wacky software tools that Aphex Twin used. Like,
I don't know.
A long time ago. It's worth checking out about Aphex. Anyway, things and stuff.
Things and stuff.
I've currently got a auction site open for a friend's business that went into liquidation recently. And I keep...
Graphic designer.
Ba-boom. But there is a matching multicam, which is a current bid of $1,700. I'm keeping an eye on, and also nice
nothing
air compressor, but we shall see. We do need to replace my air compressor soon, so keeping an eye. I'll keep an eye on that.
Do your auctions have like wild added fees on them usually? Like, here we have like 15% added fee, and then there's like there's all these other little things that they kind of hide, I swear.
Yeah. I think this is like 25% extra based on, like, it's quite a chunk.
Right. Oh, I know what this is a weird one to talk about on the show, but why not? We buy a lot of magnets from China. So that's where they're made. Neodymium magnets, all the rare earth stuff in the world basically comes from China.
Mm.
Although in the last few years, it's been kind of bounced around that Australia has rare earth materials.
Yeah.
And is starting to push more of their capacity to make those, since there's been such a weird political tension with, that was one of the strings that China pulled when our idiot Cheeto has been trying to cause international trade issues. China said, well, rare earths are going to be harder. I think I'm saying that right. Rare earth. I always hear rare earths, plural, for some reason. I went to reorder them, and one of the magnets we ordered, it's now been a couple of years, was 62% more costly. And so I was like, maybe I should look at Australia, and haven't really found, like, it's not the same kind of thing where I'm basically buying like direct from a factory. Like, I don't think that's a thing. Probably
not a thing.
I'm not going to find that. So I'd be like, I don't know. Are you making magnets there? Is this all like a thing I heard that's not real? Do you know of any of this?
I'd be really surprised if we're making magnets here. I don't. I could be wrong. Yeah,
pretty messy process.
I would be really surprised if we have that sort of industry. Maybe the raw materials are coming out of mines in Australia. Sure. I'd say that's quite likely, but something like magnet manufacturing, I can't picture.
Yeah, I bet it's just the craziest, dirtiest places, right? Like that kind of like dusty, powdery stuff that gets condensed into those magnets. Like, it's got to be nasty.
Shit's nasty.
Shit's nasty. Anyway, that was my... Maybe we'll hear from some Australians in the magnet industry.
Maybe. Hit us up.
Wow. I have a machine on order that I'm excited about. I've wanted one for a while, and I ordered it a couple weeks ago, not months. Have you ever seen a cardboard expander? Or like a shredder often? It's not so much shredding as it takes cardboard. I didn't talk about this, right?
No.
I think I did. It takes cardboard. One of our neighbor down the street has one, and I was touring his shop years ago, and he showed it to me, and I was like, that is amazing. And he was like, yeah, they're really quite affordable. And I was like, how much? He was like, oh, a couple of grand. And I was like, it's a little much for what I need. So I found one on Alibaba for $680 shipped here, and you can take any cardboard, but our intent will be boxes we receive, cardboard sheets on top of plywood that we receive, and turn it into packing material instead of
pretty
just
cool.
recycling it. Pretty easy, instant reuse.
Yeah, I do like those things, both concept and just, yeah, something very appealing about them. Cool. Right. So it hasn't arrived yet, waiting.
No, it's one of my first ocean shipments that I've done from China. Right. Everything else pretty much makes sense to do air shipping. It's like the price doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But so this is coming on a fast boat. It's like half price. It's in a crate for a total of $680. And I was pretty happy with that. It's like buying the same thing landed in the States is like at least $1,800, maybe $2,000.
Hmm. Paper bubble making machine. They've got some cool pieces of kit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fun. Well, you do ship a lot of boxes with little things in them, so perfect.
Yeah.
Your packaging is already great, like with the paper tape and the branding and the bloody blah. And the stickers. I do love getting a PDF sticker. You seem to be plastic free in terms of your packaging already? Is that standard over there? Is it normal?
No.
No?
Definitely not normal. It's been an intention and a commitment that if we're, you know, not all of our products are going to be perfectly recyclable. If we can't, you know, they're... Sometimes industrial products just can't be in, but we can definitely do plastic-free packaging, and we use recycled paper. And I think all the boxes are basically from recycled material.
Hmm.
You know, the tape is recyclable, so it does take effort because it's really easy to just take foam and wrap everything in it, and it's probably going to get there more easily, more safely. But you know, as my family motto is, we like to do things the hard way. They're a nice joke. It's like whenever there's a choice, we always end up picking the harder way to do it.
Very good.
I don't know. Just makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah, shipping's such a pain. We've got like a job lost at the moment, which still hasn't been resolved after many days of harassing FedEx. Half the shipment has arrived and the shelves for the project have not arrived. And I'm pretty confident I know why. It's because they're big and awkward and someone's dropped them or damaged them and then just pushed them into a corner of a warehouse somewhere and FedEx are like, we can't find them. And then the next day they're like, we found them. They're going out for delivery. And then the next day they say, no, we can't find them. And it's just like this loop of shitness.
Right.
I think ultimately we'll probably be remaking the shelves next week, but I don't want to jump the gun and remake them now because they're custom.
How's the customer taking it?
Oh, look, he's been amazingly patient, thankfully, seeing the humor in it and the absurdity of it, which is great. But yeah, pretty frustrating.
No kidding. It does feel really help like you are very helpless. And the few, we've had more shipments go missing than normal. Very few the last couple of years. And then we've had a few and it's, even our, like, we really like UPS and I feel like I just didn't try to, like you said in your post that you made about it, like, you know, you kind of just, they make it so onerous to get your money back that I've just ignored them sometimes because the money's been so small. But I finally was like, this is stupid. I'm not going to let them keep basically like disappearing our stuff and not getting anything back. And when I finally got through and got paid for one, I finally realized that they only pay you for the cost of what you paid for the thing, and which doesn't include any labor, if you put any labor into it.
Oh, really?
I can tell. So it's like basically nothing, you know, like,
yeah,
compared to what you sold it for and the cost of like lost opportunity and all that stuff. And it's like they make you provide receipts for how you got the thing, and it's fairly ridiculous.
Yeah, last time this happened, even we just shipped new parts and then paid to have the damaged parts shipped back. It's just like, it's such a pain. But
right,
there's not much else you can do, really.
Even when I did it basically perfectly by what UPS wanted, they still basically rejected it until I said, no, that is everything. That's all I have for a receipt. Like, I can't give you anything more. And they've just accepted it without another note. It's like they're very intentionally like, no, until I guess they just let some through. I don't know. Feels like insurance.
Yep.
That we deal with here.
Yeah, totally.
Saunders has been talking about that too. I can't even imagine. Can you imagine shipping aluminum and steel fixture plates? Like, oh, no, thank you.
I mean, I guess.
By FedEx, especially.
They're on a pallet, right? There's
often
pallets.
They ship in boxes too, but I think
do they?
Bigger ones are, yeah, pallets.
I don't think I've ever had issues shipping stuff on pallets. Like, I guess it's, you know, for big awkward stuff, it's the normal way to do it. And as long as everyone's got forklifts, it kind of goes relatively smoothly. But yeah, I think that's when, like, I think that's why this job has gone badly, is because they're long. It's like kind of the maximum length shelf you can make from a sheet of plywood. And so then you add a bit of packaging to that, and then they're longer than they're like, standard rear load pallet. So they'd have to be side load. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows?
Do you have my friends that do woodworking? We've probably talked about this. It's called like blanket wrap, where it's like almost like white glove.
Yep.
Do you have that kind of thing there?
Yeah, we do. But, you know, Sydney's
expensive, I assume.
Sydney's 1,000 kilometers away. I have white gloved jobs that far before. I've driven them myself sometimes if the total job value is high enough. But yeah, for a job like this, which is, you know, what is it? $5,000 job or something. That's like, yeah, the only reasonable way to get it there is via FedEx. But yeah. And it's been, that has been one downside of being regional, is it's a little bit harder to access those white glove services because they tend to all depart from the city. So ultimately you have to get that stuff to the city to a pickup location where one of those trucks can schedule a time to come and grab it. And so it's been a little bit harder to coordinate those. But yeah.
My feeling is you have such an incredibly, generally the people live along the coast, it seems like, in Australia. There's not a ton living in the center of the country.
Yep.
That it creates a pretty significant challenge. And I think I told you, I was watching, Road Convoy Trucker YouTube for a while of Australian dudes. It's fairly entertaining to see, this one guy trying to take, three trailers and giant trailers through, mud pits in the middle of the countryside with, nobody around to come help him. One of the times he got a trailer stuck and he just was like, it'll be here till it dries up. Nobody can get it out. It's insane, man. I don't understand.
So good.
It's just very different. There's really very few unreachable places in America, even though it's bigger, which is crazy.
Mm. Yeah, you've got the more distributed population, I think, in that respect.
Yeah.
Coming, well, things and stuff.
Where are you going to put? Are you just going to resell a CNC if you buy it? What are you doing with two CNCs? You don't want that.
I might want it temporarily because we've got Laura's sculpture commission coming up, which has got
a
whole lot of machine hours in it. It's only about 100 hours of machine time, but that's going to be disruptive to our normal production workflow, or we're going to be running split shift to get it done. So I don't know if I could pick up a machine for a few grand, run it for a while, and then on sell it. Yeah, maybe. Don't know.
Machine tool sales. I like it.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm into.
Come to the butter factory, buy a CNC or some shelves.
Came for a CNC, left with a robot.
Build your own shelves.
Yeah.
And come home with a CNC. Oh, this isn't a good business model, I don't think. Okay.
Coming.
Maybe going to hire somebody.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck with your missing shipment.
Thanks. Catch you later.
Bye.
Labor. Ring a ding ding.
Shelves on Monday morning, custom cut from plywood sheets. Customers been so patient waiting while I'm refreshing my receipts. Have the automated safely, but the big ones nowhere found. Someone dropped them in a warehouse, pushed them in a corner out of bounds. They say we found. They're longer than a standard pallet, side load only, that's the key. But somewhere between here and Sydney, they vanished into mystery. White glove service cost a fortune, blanket wraps 1,000 km away. So I trusted you with cardboard, now I'm remaking them today. You only pay for what I pay.
that never seems to pay. Just like shipping companies, they take our stuff away. FedEx, where's my shelves? Lost in your logistics hell. You make it so onerous, I can't even tell if I'll ever see my plywood again. FedEx, where's my shelves? Stuck in your carousel. Round and round this loop of shitness. Where's my shelves? 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 Thank you.